Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
Grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths.
What you got? Jinx.
Well, what I was drinking earlier was Bones Coffee Pistachio Coffee, which is decent. I mean, it's not my favorite, but it's not bad.
It smells really good when it's still the ground.
Yeah, it smells pretty dang delicious. It's what I was drinking, but...
what we were both drinking.
Yeah, it is now about 2 in the afternoon, and we are both recovering from,
colds.
Colds, so, you know, we've been drinking a lot of fluids and...
Soup.
What are you drinking?
Soup!
But what kind of soup?
Soup. I think it's called clear mushroom soup from Japanese steakhouses. The stuff they serve with your entree is the best soup.
But she doesn't like the mushrooms and stuff in it. She has to strain it. She just likes the broth.
Yeah.
See, I listen. Sometimes. I still want to put a disclaimer because I think I was listening to the episode this morning from last week. The one that we put on. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I at one point said we're not sponsored by Bones Coffee during that episode. And if you are, you know, relatively new to the show, thank you for joining us. Welcome. We are not sponsored by Bones Coffee Company.
No, that's just what we are reviewing today.
That's what we've been reviewing.
So this week is Japanese week.
Yes. Yes, it is. So.
What you got?
I've got 2 cat yokai that I'm going to talk about today.
You're going to do both?
I'm going to do both because they kind of like intermingle in a way.
Okay.
The Bakaneku and the Nekomata.
All right.
So the Bakaneku means changed cat and is often confused with the Nekomata. The distinction between the two is that the Nekomata has 2 tails while the Bakaneku only has 1. The most famous of the Bakaneku is the tale of Nabashima Bakaneku Disturbance in Saga Prefecture. Yes, that is a mouthful. Okay, so cats in Japanese mythology commonly have the attributes of their eyes changing shape depending on the time of day. For example, what I put down was like extreme pupil changes because they do. Anybody that's had cats, they know. Fur can cause sparks when they are petted, and I put in parentheses static. So like, you know, when you're on carpet and then you like pet them and it's like static everywhere. Sometimes they lick blood. They walk without making a sound. They're difficult to control, unlike dogs. They have sharp claws and teeth. They have nocturnal habits and they have speed and agility. Wow. Sounds like a solid description of you.
I don't know if I have speed and agility.
I was just waiting to hear what your response was going to be for that. Okay. So they are known to be particularly famous in mythology because although they live with humans, they are still known to be somewhat wild in nature. Bakaneku is also known to possibly lick lamp oil. Now get this. In the Edo period encyclopedia by Wakan Sansai Zue, a cat licking lamp oil is seen as an omen that a strange event is impending. A possible explanation of this lamp oil licking is that in early periods, cheap fish oils were used in lamps, for example, sardine oil. The Bakaneku are known for various abilities such as shapeshifting into humans, wearing a towel or napkin on their head while dancing, speaking human words, cursing humans, manipulating dead people, possessing humans, and lurking mountains and taking wolves with them to attack travelers. For example, on Aji Island, Oshika District, Miyagi Prefecture, and in the Oki Islands, Shimane Prefecture, there is a story of a cat that shapeshifted into a human and wanted to engage in sumo. In the Edo period, roughly between 1603 and 1867, there was a folk belief that cats with long tails, like snakes, could bewitch people, and there was always a custom of cutting their tails due to this dislike of their long tails. And it is speculated that this is why so many cats in Japan have short tails now. There's also another theory, but we'll get into that later with the other type of cat yokai. So some tales show cats that become Bakaneku after being raised for 12 years
in Ibaraki Prefecture and Nagano Prefecture, and then for 13 years in Kunigami District, Okinawa Prefecture. In Yamagata District, Hiroshima Prefecture, it is said if a cat is raised for 7 years or longer, they will kill the one that raised it.
Jeez.
There are also many regions due to this superstition where people decided in advance for how many years they would raise a cat. Depending on the area, there are also stories where cats that were brutally killed by humans would become Bakaneku and curse that human. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's just like Ancient Magus Bride. Bakaneku stories are not only about aged cats, but also sometimes about revenge against cruel humans. The Maneki Neku is a figurine of a lucky cat very popularly found in Japanese shop fronts, which is also a type of Bakaneku. Which, in case you haven't seen it, they're like these white cats with like the orange and black spots on them, and they have the one paw that's up, and then they have like a symbol on the front, and it's like that's for good luck in their shop.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the Nekomata is what I'm going to discuss next. The Nekomata first appeared in Japanese literature in the Megatsuki by Fujiwara no Taika in early Kamakura period in the beginning of Tenpuku, which is 1233. In Nanto, now Nara Prefecture, a Nekomata was said to have killed and eaten several people in one night. The Nekomata was described as a mountain beast, according to Megatsuki. They have eyes like a cat and a large body like a dog, which makes me think of a savannah cat.
Mm-hmm.
The essay Surizurigusa from late Kamakura period in 1331 tells of the Nekomata living in the recesses of the mountains and that they ate humans. So many people question if there was actually a cat monster due to a disease called Nekomata disease. Some believe the Nekomata is a beast that has caught rabies. There are also stories that they also shapeshift into people. In the Shin Chomonju, Nekomata captured in the mountains of Ki province are as large as a wild boar. In the Wakun no Shiori of 1775, their roars echo throughout the mountain, and they can be seen as big as a lion or leopard. In the Guiso of 1809, a Nekomata that held a dog in its mouth was described as having a spack of 9, shaku, and 5 sun, which in our measurements today is about 2.8 meters or nearing 9 feet.
Jeez.
Huge. So, in Echu Province, now Toyama Prefecture, at Nekomatayama, said to be where the Nekomata would devour people, which is now in Fukushima Prefecture, Nekomata that shapeshift into humans and deceive people, like Mount Nekomadaki. The legends sometimes are named after the name of the associated mountain. Despite that, there are large cats there that attack humans, which makes me think of, like, the wild cats in California that kind of come off of the mountains.
The mountain lions?
Yeah. So, there are also stories of domestic Nekomata. For example, in the Kokun Chomonju of the Kamakura period, the story Kankyo Hoin, an old cat that was raised in a villa on the mountain precipice, held a secret treasure, a protective sword, in its mouth and ran away. People chased the cat, but it disguised itself and left behind the thought of the cat becoming a monster. And in the Surizurigusa, in addition to Nekomata that conceal themselves in the mountains, there are descriptions of pet cats that grow old and transform and eat and abduct people. Since the Edo period, it is generally believed that domestic cats turn into Nekomata as they grow old and that the mountainous Nekomata are the cats that ran away to live in the mountains.
Okay.
As a result of this, a folk belief has become popular that one should not keep cats for a long time. In the Ansai Zuhitsu, the courtier Sadataki Issei stated that a cat that is several years of age will come to have two tails and become the yokai called Nekomata.
Which was in Blue Exorcist.
Right. In the book Yamato Kaiki, which actually means Mysterious Stories from Japan, written by an unknown author in 1708, there is a story of a rich samurai having a haunted house where the inhabitants witnessed several poltergeist activities. In an attempt to stop the events, the samurai called upon countless shamans, priests, and evokers, but none of them could locate the source of the terror. One day, one of the servants saw his master's aged cat carrying in its mouth a shikigami with the samurai's name imprinted on it. Immediately shooting a sacred arrow, the servant hit the cat in its head,
and as it lay dead on the floor, everyone could see that the cat had two tails and therefore had become a nekomata. With its death, the poltergeist activities ended.
Aww.
There are similar eerie tales of nekomata found in books such as, I love the names of these books and I need you to listen to what they are called. Taihei Hiyakumono Gatari, which translates to A Collection of 100 Fairy Tales, written by Yusuke in 1723, and this one's my favorite, and in Ru Chabanashi, which means Tea Time Gossip of Old Ladies.
Oh, I love it.
I know. It's by Misaka Deyada in 1742. The mata in the nekomata refers to their having two tails, but apparently there's some kind of debate on whether that's actually what it's in reference to.
Did it say what the other thing could possibly be?
They were saying something about it actually meaning something about being repetitive, but I have no idea what that could be actually referring to instead. But anywho, in Japan, cats are often associated with death, and this spirit is often blamed in particular. Darker and more malevolent than most bakaneku, the nekomata is said to have powers of necromancy, and upon raising the dead, will control them with ritualistic dances, gesturing with paw and tail. They are also associated with strange fires and other inexplicable occurrences. So the older and more abused the cat is, prior to transformation, the more power the nekomata is said to have. So basically what I took from that is don't abuse cats, and don't abuse animals in general.
Right.
To gain revenge against those who wronged it, the spirit may haunt humans with visitations from their deceased relatives. Some tales have them assume human appearances, usually as older women behaving badly in public and bringing gloom and malevolence wherever they travel. When I heard that, I'm thinking to myself how I've watched all of these Japanese YouTube videos about how it's really a big thing in Japan to not cause a stir. So, I mean, I can understand why that would be, like, a thing. But here, where we're at, it's like, it just makes me think of that one sentence. Women who... Can you say it? Because I can't.
Well-behaved women rarely make history.
Thank you.
Which is one of those quotes that is misused.
Yeah, damn.
What I was thinking was in the movie Under the Tuscan Sun, the older lady that likes to eat the ice cream, how she was like... drunk in the water fountain.
As we like to call the lady with the floppy hat.
Yeah.
That's an awesome movie. Alright, so they bring gloom and malevolence wherever they travel, and due to these beliefs, sometimes kittens' tails were cut off based on the assumption that if the tails could not fork, the cat could not become a nekomata. And that is the long-winded explanation of nekomata. Now, nekomata...
Bakeneku.
Bakeneku, thank you.
Or bakeneko. You got me saying neku now. It's bakeneko, because the word for cat is neko.
I can't. I'm having issues.
But the word bake you can find on bakedanuki. It's like a shape-shifting creature.
Right. Yes.
Where can you find them?
You can find them in a lot of media now. Leah has a picture of Espeon from Pokemon literally on her phone right now. And I can't. It's very distracting.
She's so pretty, though.
She is very beautiful, yes.
And she's a psychic type, which makes sense with that story where they had the poltergeist.
With the necromancy and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what I kept thinking about were all the Ghibli films and, like, The Cat Returns. Yes, that's a good one. And then there's the one that's on Netflix, A Whisker Away. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that one?
Where the girl turns into a cat?
Yep. And then there's Whisper of the Heart, which is, like, basically, it has references to that same cat from The Cat Returns.
Right, it has a statue of Baron in it.
Yeah.
In the shop.
Which is crazy, because now I'm looking at it, and for some reason in my head, Whisper of the Heart came after The Cat Returns, but in fact, Whisper of the Heart was 1995, and Cat Returns was 2002.
Mm.
Good films. Highly recommend them. Also, I'm pretty sure they were referencing the nekomata in Ancient Magus Bride more so than the bakuneku because of the way it was like it cursed the humans from abusing the cats because that was pretty intense.
Yeah.
That was
a dark episode.
That was a
couple of episodes.
That
right?
was like a story arc.
Yeah,
and it was like one of the darkest ones. Like That felt to me about as dark as the Nina episode.
Oof. We don't talk about that.
That episode. Full Metal Alchemist. And it doesn't matter which version, both of them are bad. So, like, pick your poison.
Exactly.
So, that is the Nekomata and the Bake Neko.
So, we're going to take a brief break and we'll be right back.
And we're back! What you got for me?
Alright. So, I decided to do research on the Hone Onna Yokai. In Japanese, Hone means bone, but it also means spirit, which I thought was interesting since she's a yokai. Onna means woman, as we've previously stated in the Yuki Onna episode. A Hone Onna is a woman that so loved her significant other that after she dies, she comes back from the dead to be with them.
Oh, wow.
She is a skeleton, but is covered by an illusion that tricks her loved ones into believing she is alive and whole again.
Oh my gosh.
She appears as she did in life, a beautiful young woman.
Can I just say that that's making me think of all, like, those shows we've seen from, like, the Middle Ages, where it's like, yeah, these things did happen where people, like, tried to, like, keep family members' corpses. Do you remember what shows I'm talking about? I think the...
I'm not remembering shows. I'm remembering the podcast where the guy fell in love with the girl.
That too.
And then, like, she died and he
made a doll. Sorry. That was my first thought when you were describing it and it gave me chills. Please keep going.
Okay. She rises from her grave at night and wanders to the house of her grieving loved ones. At first, they are shocked because they have had her funeral rites. But then they are so overjoyed to see that she is in fact, air quotes, not dead, that they welcome her back with open arms. Only outsiders and those of particularly strong religious faith are not tricked by her illusion. Sometimes even the Hone Onna does not realize that she is dead. She is only concerned with being with her loved ones. She will spend the night with her lover and leave each morning before dawn. These couplings can continue over the course of several days or weeks without notice, but every night she drains more and more of her lover's life force. He will grow sicker and weaker each night. While it kills him, it strengthens her. The lover weakens every day and will eventually die if someone does not interfere. He will eventually succumb and join her in death. Usually, an outsider, such as a servant or a neighbor, will see through the illusion and alert someone to her true nature. Her living lover may be initially repulsed when he hears the news. The family will protect the house with prayers and wards made with charms against a ghost's entry. But every day that she is not with him, she decays further. As she decays, her allure becomes stronger and sometimes re-ensnares him. The charms can only work as long as the man wills them to. If her allure becomes strong enough, the man will let her in for one final night. And so they sacrifice their life to be with the woman that they once loved.
Damn.
Okay, so I could not find explicitly what happens to the Hone Onna once her lover dies. I'm guessing from the repeated phrase, joins her in death's embrace, that she rests in peace once he is dead because they can be together in death. But nothing came out right and said that. I also didn't see any stories where she went after another man after the first one dies, because she isn't born from, like, anger at men in general and thus wants many men to die. She's born from love and only wants to be with that one man in particular.
It's like Corpse Bride.
A little bit.
Except not the same.
No. The most popular story of a Hone Onna is in a tale called Botan Doro, which translates to The Tale of the Peony Lantern. It is a 17th century Japanese ghost story that has its roots in a Chinese tale. It has been recreated in kabuki plays, films, modern ghost stories, and even puppet shows. In the Kaiden Botan Doro version, a young man named Shinzaburo meets Ijima's only daughter, Otsuyu. They fall in love, but they are in different social classes, and so they cannot be together. Otsuyu dies of longing and returns on Obon, to visit him. And they get together again. And that's when his neighbors and servants realize that she is not alive. And instead of being like good people and getting like a priest to help, they actually help her finish off Shinzaburo for money. So he dies. And then they flee the neighborhood.
Damn.
So then there's the Otogiboko version, and that's on the night of Obon, again. A beautiful woman and a young girl carrying a peony lantern walk past the home of a widower samurai named Ogiwara Shinogo. Ogiwara instantly falls in love with the woman and swears an eternal relationship with her.
Oh, shit.
Every night afterwards, at dusk, the woman and the girl visit Ogiwara. They always leave before dawn. One day, a neighbor becomes suspicious of the woman and peeks into his bedroom to see him in bed with a skeleton. A Buddhist priest is consulted, and Ogiwara finds out that he's in danger unless he can resist the woman's allure. A protection charm is placed on his home, and the Hone Onna is not able to enter. So, she calls him from the outside.
Of course she does.
Unable to resist her, he leaves the safety of his home, and she leads him back to her place. A grave at the temple.
I was about to be like, what's her place look like?
In the morning, Ogiwara's dead body is found at the temple, entwined in the arms of the skeleton. In the Kabuki theater version, a young student named Saburo falls for the beautiful Otsuyu. She is the daughter of his father's best friend. They meet in secret and swear to get married. Saburo then gets sick and is unable to go to Otsuyu for a long time. When Saburo recovers, he goes to see her and finds out that she has died. He prays for her during the Obon festival, and then hears two women approaching. He turns to look at them and sees Otsuyu and her maid. She tells him that her aunt had been opposed to their marriage and had spread a rumor that she was dead. The aunt had then told Otsuyu that Saburo was also dead. The lovers then are reunited, and each night they spend in each other's arms. This continues until one night a servant looks through a hole in the wall and sees Saburo having sex with a decaying skeleton.
Everybody's looking at everybody else having sex.
I know, like, why is everyone looking in bedroom windows? Like,
oh, let me just get a gander to make sure you're having sex with a living being.
Right. There's something you're suspicious.
You're still being a creep. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Regardless, it's creepy.
It is creepy.
But then it got, like, I'm thinking on the other side, like, why are you looking inside, bro?
So they see them having sex, but the maid is also a skeleton, and she's kneeling in the doorway with her peony lantern.
What?
The servant goes to a Buddhist monk who finds the grave of Otsuyu and her maid. The monk then takes Saburo there and convinces him of the truth. And he agrees to help Saburo protect his home from the Hone Onna. The monk places a fuda, which are the prayer talismans that can be made out of paper, wood, cloth, or metal, around Saburo's home and prays Nenbutsu every night. This keeps Otsuyu and her maid from entering the home. But every night, they come by the house and again call out to Saburo. Pining after her, his health declines. Saburo's servants become worried that he's going to die from the heartbreak, and they remove the ofuda. Otsuyu enters the house and sleeps with Saburo once again. The next morning, the servants find Saburo dead, entwined with Otsuyu's skeleton.
Lots of endings where the man ends up dead regardless.
Yeah. It did say that if they could resist her, they would survive, but then none of the actual stories I read
show them resisting.
Had them surviving.
Like, oh no, please stop. I can't any longer. Dead.
Yeah. So it's important to note that this would have been a more common story from a little longer ago, because currently 99.97% of Japanese people are cremated. Because I went down a bunny hole. While it's believed that the first cremation in Japan was a Buddhist monk from 700 CE and followed 3 years later by the Empress Jito's cremation, It did not become popular in Japan until between 1930 and 1970.
That's relatively recent.
Yeah.
Damn.
It is unlikely that we will hear new stories of Hone Ono. However, this story has been remade into many films ever since films were invented. Boten Dora was first put to film in 1910 as a silent film. Over the years, it has been remade as these films, and these are obviously the English translation. Bride from Hell, Haunted Lantern,
oh damn,
Ghost Beauty, Bride from Hades, My Bride is a Ghost, which made me think of My Bride is a Mermaid, which is an anime.
Right.
Etc.
I feel like I've seen one of them.
You might have.
In an old, like, those were horror films, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And apparently there was a period of time where they were basically remaking the movie every decade and just revamping it. So the Hone Ono also appears in the anime Hellgirl, along with its live-action remake, along with the 1996 anime Gegege no Kitaro.
Huh.
And once again, she is a monster in both D&D and Magic the Gathering.
Of course.
And that is the Hone Ono. So she freaked you out quite a bit, huh?
She was creepy listening to. Because I kept on thinking of, like, you remember The Girl King? It's the movie about the Swiss... I think her name was Christina from Sweden. And, like, she was, like, a lesbian.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it was in that movie or if it was a different... Like, I feel like it was in that movie where, like, her mom was crazy or something and tried to, like... preserve
her father
mm-hmm. for an ungodly amount of time.
Yeah, so
just like that's gross.
So apparently before cremation got big, they would bury people, but sometimes only rich people could afford to bury their loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
So people that didn't have as much money would sometimes take the bodies out into like the woods for them to just decay and go back to nature. But there was also this thing again with like the upper class where the wife or the concubine, there was like a funeral house,
mm-hmm.
and they would inter the body before it would be buried, and the woman would stay in the house near the body for like months to years until it was like bones.
Oh, and then no thank you.
It kind of made it sound like there was maybe like under the floor and she had to live in the house, but I didn't like go too deep down that bunny hole. But and then it would be there, you have the actual internment when it was just
nope. I'm not cool with that. Like, I understand watching the area until you're like, I think it was it Celtic mythology where we're talking about the cats and the
right make yeah. sure that they didn't come.
Yeah, there's that, but then there's this, and I'm like,
well, and then there's how there were some sicknesses where the person would appear dead, so then they had to start having wakes to right. make sure that the person didn't just like pop back up alive.
Right.
So there's lots of
crazy shenanigans that
have to do with burials all across the world. So that's the Hone Ono.
I feel a little scarred, not gonna lie. Maybe not particularly from the Hone Ono, but like rethinking about that after it was like one of those memories that you just pretend didn't happen.
Yeah. Some things are better left unseen.
You know, yeah.
All right. So to anyone who's still around after that kind of creepy second part.
Yeah.
Reminders. Make sure to check out our art for this week's entities on our Instagram at Coffee Table Mythos. If you want to share any art of your own for these beings, make sure to use our hashtag Coffee Table Mythos so that we and our followers can check them out. As always, if you have any stories or requests, please email us at coffeetablemythos@gmail.com. And remember to mention if you want a shout out of a name or handle, or if you would like to remain anonymous. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Coffee Table Mythos. You can message us on here as well.
Check out our merch on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos. We are adding more listings as we research more beings and make more art. If you would like to donate to us, you can on anchor.fm/coffeetablemythos. Or you can become a patron through patreon.com/coffeetablemythos. For right now, all donations will go to making this podcast better. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, share, and review our podcast if you have the time. We are interested in what you have to say. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.